I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. It's become a phenomenon unique to the United States. Mass shootings whose carnage is impossible to keep track of. This year alone, there have been at least 152 mass shootings. As public spaces from grocery stores to workplaces become increasingly dangerous, we're talking to two folks who's going to help us break down the mental health effects of mass shootings and policy changes that must take place. Ron Acherno is the executive director of the Trauma Resilience Center and professor of psychiatry at UT Health Houston. Ron, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
And Adam Skaggs is chief counsel and policy director for Giffords Law Center. Adam, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ron, I'm just going to skip the first question I have and just be honest, which probably as a journalist isn't a good idea, but I don't want to leave my house right now. I spent the weekend looking, could not keep track of the number of mass shootings that have taken place. I call this a sickness, and I don't know how else to explain it.
When you look at homicide rates across the industrialized world, you know, what we call quote unquote first world countries, we blow everybody else out of the water in terms of homicide and mass violence. So I think your response is the appropriate one. In terms of disgust, perhaps not in terms of not wanting to leave the house, but we are an extraordinarily violent country for the first world, and no one else is close to us.
Well, so what do you say to? I mean, this is happening. It was happening in schools. It's happening in grocery stores. It's happening at workplaces. Like, I mean, obviously we have to leave the house, but leaving the house has become a situation where you just don't know if you're going to return from quotidian activities.
Well, let me first say that statistically, you are safe in leaving the house. And rationally, it is a thing you can do. And it's when we start changing our behavior based on perception as opposed to reality that it becomes a problem, a functional impairment. So, you know, I just want to put it out there. It's not dangerous to leave your house, although it might be more dangerous here. Overall, it's not dangerous to leave your house. But when you have as many violent events with as much press coverage as we have, the perception that it's extraordinarily dangerous is going to be there. And it probably should be. I mean, we shouldn't accept these things as if they were normal. Unfortunately, the statistic you just gave, and I think we've had six since Friday when you called me to be on the show, six mass shootings sort of makes the normal. And that's what I'm sort of worried about, that this is becoming too commonplace such that those who are not afraid to leave their house don't even think twice about it.
Adam, are there any demographic or geographical trends in terms of where this type of violence is taking place?
Well, I think the short answer to that is, unfortunately, it's taking place everywhere. When you talk about these mass shootings, you know, we've had more mass shootings than days this year thus far. But I think it's also, when you think about gun violence in this country, it's important to note that the vast majority of deaths don't take place in these mass shootings that get so much media attention. They just take place in day-to-day incidents of violence that often don't get very much coverage. You know, last year we had a pandemic that exerted a devastating toll on public health. We also saw a massive increase in gun violence and in deaths from fatal shootings. So the FBI is still releasing data. It hasn't sort of finalized the 2020 data yet. But we've seen the 50 largest cities in the country, we've seen in almost every single one of them a massive increase, an average of about 35% increase in fatal gun shootings last year. And then, of course, suicide drives a huge amount of this violence. So it's unfortunately something that affects communities of all kinds across this country.
What type of effect does this type of violence, or even the perception of this type of violence, have on our brains?
Well, you know, when you're exposed to violence in person, if it's directed at you or it's directed towards someone right next to you, you have a fight or flight response. You get activated. You either need to run away from the situation or deal with the situation. If this happens repeatedly, your brain quite literally starts to burn itself out. You can only sustain such intensity for so long. So a coping response, and your prior guest was straight on. She said, you know, some of these coping responses are very negative. could be withdrawal, could be substance abuse, some way to numb the things. But the bottom line is you don't just get used to it. Now, getting used to it and getting desensitized to it are two very different things. When you hear it on the news, but you're not experiencing it yourself and you hear it all the time, you get desensitized to it. When you experience it in the family or firsthand, which, as Adam said, then you start to get burned out by it. You start to get anxious. You have problems sleeping. You might have problems with your stomach. You know, different people manifest in different ways. But the anxiety and the depression and the withdrawal are the most common symptoms. And when this happens repeatedly, you don't get used to it. You get more sensitized to it.
Adam, are we seeing more political engagement around this issue because of what we're seeing on media and the fact that, for example, we just had 6 mass shootings in a couple of days?
Well, look, I think the public has made clear, public opinion is clear that we've had enough of this. We want action. We want our leaders, whether in Congress or at the state or local level, to take action to do something about this. You know, gun violence is only increasing and the status quo is unacceptable. And I think we've seen the public make very clear they want to see action.
Adam, President Biden announced some executive actions to address gun violence. What do we know so far?
Well, I think the fact that the president and the Biden-Harris administration has acted on this issue within the first 100 days is a promising sign. I think it's a good start. And I think some of the actions that they have announced are going to be important. They're an important first step. Particularly, they've announced they're going to reassess and promote a rule that will address how to deal with so-called ghost guns. These are do-it-yourself sort of homemade guns that people can buy without background checks. And that's a really serious threat to public safety. They've announced that they're going to address the type of weapon that was used in the shooting in Boulder. This is effectively a short-barreled assault weapon, and they're going to address that. But ultimately, we need Congress to act. You know, the House of Representatives has already passed 2 really important pieces of gun legislation this year, extending background checks to make sure that anytime somebody buys a gun, they pass a background check, and that the FBI has time to complete the background check so that nobody actually acquires a gun while the background check is still ongoing. So those are really important pieces of legislation. They are now in the Senate, and obviously there are some political challenges there. But the fact that the president and the administration have already announced they're going to do what they can do via executive action, I think is a very important sign of the seriousness with which this administration is approaching this terrible threat to public health.
It is a threat to public health. And Ron, I'm wondering your thoughts on what we started talking a little bit about how people react to hearing the news. And yes, the news media is reporting on it. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on what we should or shouldn't be doing in terms of that reporting. But the fact is it's happening and Americans are probably very anxious about it. What should people be thinking about in terms of their own anxiety levels if they're paying attention to this and feeling some sort of way, feeling like they need help? And in particular, those people who have either been in close proximity to one of these shootings or know someone who was a victim of one of these shootings in terms of survivors. Like, what mental health services do we need to start putting in place? And is it just a question of mental health, Ron?
Okay, well, first, I do think the news needs to report on it. People need to hear about it. But also, seconding what Adam said earlier, interpersonal violence in this country is not just mass shootings. It's also shootings of domestic partners and physical assaults and the whole gamut. So you're extraordinarily, over your lifetime, likely to have been exposed to violence, either at school or in the household in this country. And that has mental health effects, avoidance, depression, and withdrawal. And to answer your question directly, what can we do? The first thing you have to realize is when there's a problem. So if you're changing the things that used to give you joy, if you're doing things differently, if you're withdrawing, if you're not fulfilling the roles that you need to fulfill during the day, then it's an indication that this violence has negatively affected you. So if somebody witnesses violence, for example, at school or witnesses a mass shooting, and then they stop going out of the house and they stop living their life, that is an indication that that you need to get some help, some evidence-based counseling. And I say evidence-based counseling because the treatment is not simply talking about the weather or talking about your childhood. The treatment is focused on exposing yourself to realistically safe reminders of the event. So you might still have to go to the store, you might still have to go to places, but places that are realistically safe.
Like, there's a bigger problem here in that, why do we have to live like this, I think is what I'm hearing from a lot of people. I don't know if you, Ron or Adam, either one of you want to weigh in like that, but there's something that we're sort of getting used to,
I'd
the
like
fact
to
that
weigh
this
in.
Is happening. Go ahead.
No, we accept it. We've accepted violence as a communication style. We've accepted violence as the way it is. And it doesn't have to be that way. 75% of the population want better background checks and gun control. But I would take it a step further. We have too much violence in the household. We have accepted domestic violence as a way of life. Now, after, you know, the 70s, 80s, the O.J. Simpson trial, things like that, we said, no, domestic violence is bad. But in fact, domestic violence during this pandemic has exploded. Elder abuse has increased. All of these things we're accepting. So I think it's got to come from a general putting the foot down and saying we're not going to accept violence as a communication style in school, in the home, and all of these places, because we are an extremely violent society. If you look at how many people have been physically assaulted by the time they're age 65, it's a tremendous proportion of the population. That's odd. And so when you say, why are so many people having psychological effects of this? Well, because they're normal. And that's the normal response to being beaten up.
I think you're absolutely right, Ron. And Adam, I'm just curious about, I mean, we talked a little bit about what President Biden's executive orders are meant to do. And to be honest, I look at the infrastructure, I look at the culture of violence in the United States that we have. I look at the infrastructure for purchasing guns right now. And I just don't see a clear path to getting past this violence, societal violence, at least not from a legislative perspective, for quite some time. It just feels like we're chipping away at a problem while people are still dying.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, look, nobody is saying that any one law or any one bill pending in Congress is going to solve this problem. We obviously have cultural changes that we need to see before we're able to eliminate this violence that, Ron's absolutely right, pervades our society. But there are important legislative steps. There are important policies that can be adopted. We have policies that we know have been proven to reduce gun violence. And starting with those initial steps, I think, is critically important at this point.
Are there other countries that are getting it right in terms of gun violence?
Well, virtually every other country is getting it right. Even just look north of the border in Canada, where there's actually, compared to most other countries around the world, a very high level of gun ownership, whether it's, you know, rifles and shotguns for hunting or handguns. But there is a much greater regulation of gun possession, of who purchases guns, and the kind of training, the kind of education that needs to be done before they're granted a gun license. So I think we don't have to look far to see some common sense regulation. You know, to drive a car in this country, you need a license, you need registration. We don't have that for guns. And starting to provide training, to provide meaningful oversight and regulation of gun ownership, I think is a critical first step, at least, towards addressing these problems.
Adam Skaggs is Chief Counsel and Policy Director for the Giffords Law Center, and Ron Acherno is the Executive Director of the Trauma and Resilience Center and Professor of Psychiatry at UT Health Houston. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
It's literally becoming a weekly event, and while I haven't become numb to it, it's like, of course there's another mass shooting, because nothing is being done about it. No change equals no change. And no change is going to happen until we acknowledge the only difference between the U.S. and other countries who don't have mass shootings is we have too many handguns and a lot of lame reasons for why we should be able to have them. This is Catherine Ryan from New York City.
Leanne from Los Angeles. How has the deluge of gun violence in our country affected my family? Well, my pacifist teens who walked alongside their Black, Brown, and Indigenous brothers and sisters in BLM protest now want guns for their own personal protection. This is not at all how any of us thought it would turn out.
Hello, this is Bennett in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm calling in response to the question about gun violence. Guns are not violent. People are violent. I carry a firearm for violent people. I'm not afraid of inanimate objects. It's just you have to be prepared for whatever may come.
What about my freedom to work, shop, send kids to school, see a movie, or even walk down the street? Guns should be licensed, insured, and policed like cars and drivers. If people want to join a well-regulated militia, they can join the National Guard. Thank you.
Hi, this is Charlie from Portland, Oregon. My take on this is, as much as you don't like to say it, we need to focus less on how these crimes are committed and focus on why these shootings are happening. I think we get mired in this argument over gun control, and both sides have valid arguments, but I think gun control boils down to collective punishment on an entire nation over the acts of few. And yet, in that whole argument, the bigger picture of what drives another human being to kill other human beings gets overlooked. And we need to focus on that more than trying to take guns from people. We need to get help for people is what we need to focus on.
Hi, my name is Marigold from what used to be Sleepy San Diego. The gun violence is getting too close. It's got to be stopped. I'm afraid I will get killed when I go outside my door.
This is Lee Konzak in St. Louis, Missouri. It makes me reflect on how different we are compared to other countries in terms of the frequency of mass shootings we have seen the past 20 years. I am a gun owner. I own a shotgun and shoot once in a while for sport, but I am in favor of universal background checks and banning assault weapons for good. They are military weapons, for God's sake, and designed to kill people. The Constitution does not give people the right to own military weapons.
Katie from St. Louis, Missouri. I have several years of experience working with grieving kids who have been affected by gun violence. I would be surrounded with 10 children, elementary age, all who have lost significant person from gun violence. And it's just devastating. And the kids want peace and they want, everyone to put down the gun. Something needs to give.
I have not grown numb to the recent mass shootings. I want reasonable gun laws enacted. I want background checks to be mandatory for every single weapon sale. And I want longer waiting periods to purchase weapons enacted into law. I just want common sense to prevail. This is Pam, and I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jonathan from Louisville, Kentucky, and no, gun violence has not taken an emotional or physical toll on our family. We've come to realize that it's part of American daily life every day now. All we have to do is watch our local news to see how many people are shot and or killed each night. And it's unfortunate, but it has made us become more aware of what people are doing when we are out and about in our surroundings. And I guess it's a good thing to be a little more cautious.
Hi, this is Peter calling from Boynton Beach, Florida. Yeah, I think it's very depressing, all these shootings. I can't believe Congress won't do anything about it. I think we should leave our flags at half-mast permanently. It seems like the state we're in.
This is Jane Stackhouse from Portland, Oregon. The question today was, how has gun violence impacted you? And my response is, not directly, and yet every day.